What was your taxable college grant and scholarship aid reported to the IRS as income last year? Did or will your parents file a Schedule 1 with their 2021 tax return? As of today, is either of your parents a dislocated worker? For a lot of high school students filling out the FAFSA, the answer to these questions is, what?
I know that a lot of people had difficulty with the questions about dependents and stuff like that.
This is Danelle Antibon. She's currently a senior in high school.
I have to agree with Danelle.
And this is her friend, Michelle Owosu-Korte.
Some of the people I know didn't fill it out because of how difficult the questions were. The way they were worded kind of made it harder for them to really understand what they really wanted.
Some of their classmates also didn't understand how important the FAFSA is. For them, it felt like just another form to fill out.
I know that a lot of people were complaining that, we're getting so much work during this time that we also have to fill out FAFSA and complete college apps and all this stuff.
Luckily, Michelle and Danelle had parents and counselors who could walk them through the free application for federal student aid and help them understand why it's important. Here's Danelle again.
My teacher or counselor, she kept telling us how important it was because it's free money and who doesn't want free money? So my parents also told me because my mom used FAFSA when she was going to college. So she also knew how important it was because college is expensive. So any way that I could take down that cost, I will do it.
In the end, Michelle and Danelle successfully completed the 100 questions on the FAFSA. But some of their classmates who also could have received free money did not. And that's not surprising. Lots of high school students, particularly those who are low income, don't complete the FAFSA. In 2020, 61% of high school students didn't fill it out. As a result, millions of dollars in federal aid go unclaimed each year. In 2018 and 2019, the number was $550 million. So last year, California introduced a measure designed to get the money into the hands of more students, particularly those who are from low-income and first-generation backgrounds. But is it actually working?
Higher Ed Rewired is a production of the California State University, the largest, most diverse four-year public university system in the country, and an engine of social and economic mobility. Each episode examines groundbreaking research and exciting innovations taking place across the nation that are transforming the pathways for student success.
This is Higher Ed Rewired. I'm Michael Wiafe. I'm a San Diego State University alumnus and past president of the Cal State Student Association. Last year, Assembly Majority Leader Eloise Gomez-Reyes introduced AB 469 to make filling out the FAFSA and the California Dream Act application for undocumented folks a requirement for high school seniors in California. The idea is that if completing these forms is mandatory, then more low-income and first-generation students will claim the aid that's waiting for them. The measure passed last fall and began implementation at the start of 2022. So today, we'll discuss some of the benefits and drawbacks of this policy. I'll speak with the Vice President of the Public Policy Institute of California about how AB 469 will help students get the resources that they need. Then, I'll talk with the Executive Director of the Education Trust West about why he thinks AB 469 can encourage more students to enter college. And I'll chat with the Director of Education Services at the Montebello School District about some of the problems that high schools have implementing AB 469. Together, we'll discuss what the next steps should be to ensure more low-income and first-generation students can finance their education.
It's certainly the case that the price of college has increased overall over the last 20 years or so. But I think the ways in which it has increased is actually fairly surprising to people.
This is Dr. Londe Ajose. She's a vice president and senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California and the interim director of the Higher Education Center, also at PPIC.
During the Great Recession of 2008, we saw an increase in college prices, in large part in public institutions in California, because the state had to pull back because of their own budget. So we saw kind of a steep increase happening there. And then things leveled out. However, the cost of college overall was going up. And the reason that the cost of college has been going up is in terms of what has happened over time, very gradually with housing prices. So the total cost of attendance has increased because the cost of going to college is inclusive of housing and food and transportation and health insurance.
As a result, financial aid has become almost essential for students, especially those from low-income or first-generation backgrounds. And this is one of the reasons that AB 469 was introduced.
The idea is this needs to be a way to open up opportunity for all students. Complete the FAFSA or the CADA, so everyone has access to resources, and that will then help to level the playing field, help to really achieve that goal of equity when it comes to affordability for college.
Receiving federal aid transforms lives. Just ask Dr. Christopher Nellum. He's the executive director of the Education Trust West, or ETW for short. It's a statewide research and advocacy organization that works with and for communities of color to improve education.
When I was in high school, in my senior year, actually, I was probably being a knucklehead in the hallway, and a counselor, Miss Hardy, you know, saw me and pulled me aside and, you know, said, "Yeah, what are you doing? Like, why are you sort of goofing off in the hallway?" And asked me like what my college plans were. And at the time, I don't think I really had solidified what those plans were.
Miss Hardy worked with Nellum to choose where to apply, and she helped him fill out the FAFSA so that he could finance his education.
That moment, even though I was probably being a troublemaker, really changed my life. Not many people from where I'm from go away to college, and the fact that I had that opportunity, she pulled some strings for me to make it, like to allow it to work out, quite literally changed the trajectory of my life. I went away to college, finished, you know, figured out what a master's degree was, figured out what a doctoral degree was, and attained those things.
That's one reason Nellum was a proponent of AB 469.
My life in so many ways was based on this serendipitous moment, and people's futures should not be based on serendipity. And for ETW, we've been working in schools and districts across the state trying to understand what does good practice look like? What are the bright spots across the state? And we have been tracking that for over a decade and have seen some progress. But I think the thing that we also have seen is that the gaps have not closed. And so what that means for our state is that there is money left sitting on the table. And that's money that should have students' names on it. That money that remains on the table is most inaccessible for the students who could benefit the most, and that is low-income students of color.
Making the FAFSA mandatory can also help high schools meet one of their most important goals.
If we think the one purpose of a high school is to ensure that young people are prepared to go to college, we can't call the job done if we haven't prepared them to understand the cost of going to college. And to do that, you have to complete this form right now. And so our belief is as long as that form exists, high school should play a role in helping young people complete it.
And that's a perspective I've never actually heard before, but makes complete and total sense. And I actually agree with that, where when you're filling out the form, that's when you start realizing how real things are. And you also get to know through that process how much each college costs that you're applying to.
I think that's right. And, you know, one of our hopes is that as young people do that, they'll do what you're suggesting. It'll become more real to them. And that there are probably some young folks who don't believe they can go to college because they can't afford it, who may realize, wow, there actually is money available to me in the form of Pell Grant and or Cal Grant or institutional aid, and that might help them be more excited about going to college.
Filling out the FAFSA should be a positive experience that shows that college is attainable, not a grueling process that discourages students from even applying. Unfortunately, that ideal often gets lost in translation.
Our student body is 95% Latinx. 81% of our students participate in the free or reduced lunch program. And 31% of our students are multilingual learners.
This is Leticia Alvidres. She's the Director of Educational Services for the Montebello Unified School District.
most of these students are first-gen students looking and hearing about FAFSA for the first time. And, you know, in my research, low-income first-gen students are the least likely to complete an application. And so this is definitely something that we recognize as a need in our district. And we also recognize that in our community, you know, there is a high intention and there is a high value given to higher education. So there's a mismatch in completion rates versus how my community views higher education.
Alvidrez thinks AB 469 is an important step towards encouraging more students to attend college.
When a student completes a FAFSA application, they increase their chances of enrolling in a higher institution by more than 80%. And for a Latinx student, it's increased by 40% of that 80%.
However, Alvidra says the implementation of AB 469 hasn't been perfect. For instance, the FAFSA itself needs to be simplified. Because even if students fill it out, they might do so incorrectly, and that impacts the amount they might receive. Alvidra has mentioned one improvement that could be made to the translated versions of the form, particularly in Spanish, which is the most common non-English language spoken in the United States.
For example, work study. So when you look at the translation for work study, it'll just say trabajo y estudio, which is really straightforward translation.
Work and study.
Okay, yeah. Well, does that mean like I just go get my own job? Or it doesn't really specify, and it's not something that is of common use in the Spanish language. There's just adjusted gross income, tax deferred pension, standardized loans. There's just a lot of terminology that really will directly translate into another language, but it really doesn't carry any meaning in the other language unless it's like thoroughly explained.
Alvidrez added that while these explanations are crucial, she and her colleagues don't always feel qualified to make them.
And so even within a school site or within a district, you know, you almost need like a FAFSA expert in order to assist in completing these applications. Because even sometimes when I help students, you make an educated guess and you fill it out as best as you can. And you hope that the student gets the best award that they can possibly get. And then there's steps that follow the FAFSA completion. So even if you do complete it correctly, right, or you hope that you did, you need to understand what your award letter is saying. If you get selected for verification, there's additional steps. Oh, and then there's an appeal process if you're not satisfied with your award letter. But even, I mean, I learned about the appeal process 2 days ago, right?
AB 469 also arrived at a time when schools were already struggling to recover from distance learning and COVID protocols.
I can see this as another accountability measure with an uneven playing field. And so I think for a district like mine that has a high population of not only first-gen students, but English language learners, there's a lot of foundational work that needs to occur in order to be able to be at the same completion rate of other districts that may not look like us. And I really believe like the intent of this assembly bill is to build a culture of college and financial aid awareness. But if the systems aren't built to support the assembly bill, it's going to have a mandated compliance response rather than what's intended in the bill.
Dr. Christopher Nellum, Executive Director of the Education Trust West, understands the concerns that high school administrators have about the cost of implementation. But he's also talked to educators who've said that there are some low-cost ways to start.
In addition to hearing that concern, I think what I would say is folks should talk to their peers. They should attend counselors' conferences and hear the really creative, phenomenal things that other counselors and other schools are doing to get this done. So that's one thing. And I think that, but that does not negate the fact that the state also needs to figure out the right sorts of resources and infrastructure to help counselors along. And so I think there's work we can do now, and then there's more work the state certainly needs to do to make this a reality.
So what's the next step? What other policies can make college affordable for low-income and first-generation students?
We think about this question in like a puzzle. I'm actually looking at this image that we use. And there are pieces that we think about the financial aid system as an ecosystem.
Nelum is talking about a puzzle graphic that his team developed to talk about financial aid policy. It's made up of three pieces of legislation. AB 469, which we've discussed already, AB 1456, which also passed in fall 2021, and SB 737, which is still going through the state Senate. AB 1456 would expand access to Cal Grant awards and eligibility by removing barriers that prevented some students from receiving aid.
I think the state in the past was looking for ways to ration financial aid, and so there are limits related to age. There were limits related to how long you've been out of high school. And the bill this year would modernize some of that. You know, if you think about the age barrier I mentioned, if we remove that, in addition to the time, they call it the time out of high school limit, we might reach more student parents. We might reach more veterans who have taken some time off. And we know student parents, veterans are likely folks of color. Almost by definition, if they are eligible for aid, they're low income or experiencing some level of poverty. And it's a significant investment. I don't think we should think of it just as an expenditure. It's an investment in Californians who deserve access to the best higher education system in the world.
The last piece of the puzzle is SB 737, which would modernize the California Student Opportunity and Access Program, CalSOAP for short. This program works with low-income and first-generation students to prepare them for higher education.
The long and short of what that proposal would do is help that program be more focused on financial aid application literacy, if you will, not to be confused with financial literacy. And so the program to date has really been more broadly focused on college going, you know, grades, academics. But I think the intent was to more narrowly focus the program on making sure that folks are literate about what their financial aid options are. So helping them understand how to complete the financial aid form, how to help them navigate something called financial aid verification, which happens from time to time. And so we're really excited about that because it's another tool that doesn't only put the pressure or the need on counselors, but it's another tool that schools and districts have to help this along.
Another policy change might involve making the FAFSA considerate of non-tuition costs. Because as Londe Ajose explained earlier, the living expenses of higher education can be more prohibitive for students.
So what has always frustrated me is we have students who are applying for resources who clearly have some degree of financial need. Those same students probably are eligible for CalFresh or food support. They might be eligible for different types of housing supports, either at the state or the federal level, and yet these programs don't talk to each other. And there's something that we need to do to streamline things on the back end so that our public systems, our data systems begin to talk to each other so that when we approach people with the kind of support that they are looking for, that we're doing that in a way that's comprehensive. A student should never have to go and fill out 14 forms to get all of the things they need in order to be able to go to college.
Ultimately, policymakers should not only talk with each other, but also with the students they serve.
I mean, I think that we need to spend a little more time really working together as adults in the system to really make sure that we're more focused on listening to the students and what they need rather than presuming that we know what they need.
Ajose advised us to listen to the students. So I asked Michelle and Janelle, the high school seniors you heard at the top of the episode, what improvements would you make to the FAFSA? And their solution seems, to me at least, pretty achievable. Here's Michelle.
If schools started talking about this from freshman year or from sophomore year or whatever, I think more people would begin to understand the importance of it or realize, you know, if you don't fill this out, you're going to lose so many opportunities to fill out different scholarships and to get different types of money from different places.
Yeah. Do you agree, Danelle, or maybe have additional thoughts?
I do, actually. When Michelle said it, I was like, wow, that's a very important point because I agree with her. The teachers always talk about, you know, how college and everything, how expensive it is and all that. But then I think if they tell us about how we can pay for it earlier on, that would really help. For example, like with SATs and ACTs and stuff, they've been talking to us about this since like middle school. But when it comes to FAFSA, like I feel like we just heard about it in high school, not even just high school, like junior year, you know, or senior year. So I feel like they need to add it on to like when they talk to us about SATs, be like, yo, if you want to actually help get through college and like not be in so much debt when you're done, FAFSA, because then it'll be in the back of our heads. So if they told us about, you know, FAFSA earlier on, that would really help.
Making FAFSA mandatory and expanding Cal Grant eligibility are important steps towards making financial aid more accessible. And involving students in further reform can ensure that the aid that they receive isn't by chance, but guaranteed.
Higher Ed Rewired is produced by the California State University Office of the Chancellor as part of the CSU's Graduation Initiative 2025. This podcast is made possible in part by the support of the College Futures Foundation. More graduates for a thriving California. Learn more at collegefutures.org. To hear more stories like this, listen at higheredrewired.com or subscribe from wherever you get your podcasts.